Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get
asking me
question or comment. So we'll get to that in just a second. Again, go ahead and start dialing those numbers up at 347-857-2002. First things first, just a few announcements. If you're looking for something to do in H-Town, because this is the place where you can find out. There's so many events. You know, Houston is the fourth largest city in the country, and we have so many entertainment and arts events that goes on in the city. And many of us cannot afford the luxury of advertising because, well, advertising is very, 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 very expensive. And sometimes we hear about fantastic events after it's already over. And so this is where you can call and listen in or listen in on your computer and find out what's going on. As a matter of fact, I invite those of you who are performing artists to send me an email to let me know what you do, and we might interview you on the show. So send those interviews to f_anderso@hotmail.com. That's f_anderso@hotmail.com. Send us a picture and a bio, and if you are a musician and you have your own original music, send at least three of your pieces of work via MP3 format only. MP3 format only. And if we choose to select you, we will be glad to have you on the show. So what's going on in the neighborhood? Well, tonight, if you like good music, it's not too late to get over there and see my friend Ike at the Times Square nightclub over there on West Fuquay, close to Hiram Clark, tonight. The Orion Band, with my good friend and vocalist, Mr. Leroy Allen, are playing tonight. They just got kicked off about an hour ago, so it's not too late to check them out. As a matter of fact, Leroy Allen, the lead singer with the group The Orion Band, was a guest on my show last year. If theater is your thing, get over there at the Houston Ensemble Theater and check out my good friend Eileen Morris. They got a play going on over there that runs through May the 31st called Just a Couple of Old Black Men Sitting Around Talking. And it stars my good friends Mr. Byron Jaquette and Alex Morris. Alex Morris is a fantastic nationally known actor who actually lives in L.A., who's come to H-Town just for this production. I got a chance to see the production myself, as a matter of fact, on last Sunday. And I tell you, this is a show that you won't want to miss. That's going to be running now through May the 31st at the Houston Ensemble Theater. The Houston Ensemble Theater is the oldest black theater in the southwest of USA, located at 3535 Main. For ticket information or more information about the production, you can give them a call at 713-520-0055. Now, if comedy is your thing, and you want to check out my daughter, Christina Anderson, a.k.a. Roxy Hayes, she's a part of the Showdown at the Showcase comedy competition. It's going to be held at the Joke Joint comedy place. That's located at 11460 Fuquay, and that's going to be going down next Thursday. That's this coming Thursday, actually, May the 21st, starting at 7 p.m. That's the Showdown at the Showcase. Some of the best comics in the area are going to be performing. And again, that's going to be at the Joke Joint Comedy Showcase, located at 11460 Fuquay Street. So, as you can see, a lot of stuff going on in the neighborhood. And once again, if you're a performing artist, send that information to my email at f_anderso@hotmail.com. And as Ashton and Simpson says, the best thing about it is that it don't cost you nothing. We'll be right back with our guest. Thank you. Blessings for the patrons of theater who, you know, sometimes don't always get a chance to see some of our area writers because of the fact that there's basically no venue for them. But our special guest tonight is the founder of Fade to Black, Ms. Denise O'Neill, and she has made all that very, very possible. As a matter of fact, coming up in less than a month, June the 11th through the 13th, H-Town is going to be blessed again with an opportunity to see some of these outstanding works. So with that, I'd like to bring up to our microphone our guest speaker, or guest for this evening, Ms. Denise O'Neill. Hey, Denise, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing just fantastic for an old man. So give us a little background history on Fade to Black. When did it start? What was your inspirational for starting it? And just a few little details about the upcoming event for the year 2015.
Well, in 2013, I had been in the Houston theater community for a while, and I was beginning to make new friends of from all sides of theater, and I was going to play festivals that were really nice. I was having a good time, but I was never really seeing any play festivals that showed or supported or shined a light upon the African-American experience. So the plays would be funny, or they'd be nice and, you know, nice to see, but you really never saw the mark of a black playwright being in the festival. So you could never say, well, that probably was written by a black playwright, or that tells about the black experience in this particular play. I never saw any of that, and I just felt like it was time for a change. I did some research to see if anyone had ever done it in the city of Houston, and I found out that no one had ever held a play festival ever that celebrated the new works of African-American playwrights. So I decided to do it, and it's been very successful, very well attended, actually.
So this all started in 2013.
Right, in a small black box theater. I partnered with my friend Lisa Walker, and she was a managing director for Obsidian Art Space, which is a black box theater in the Heights. And she believed in the concept. Lisa's a good friend of mine. I call her my twin, but I'm black and she's white.
Okay.
She had the theater, and she believed in what I was doing. She supported new works, and she partnered with me to build the basic foundations and rules and regulations. And she predicted that we would have a sellout crowd, and for the past 2 years, she's been right.
Excuse me. Now, as I understand it, the playwrights that you showcase, even though this has been an annual event here in Houston, the playwrights come from all over. Is that correct?
Right. It's just a national play festival. We put out a call for submissions in February of each year, and it's open to every black playwright of every state. This year we actually got a submission from someone from New Zealand, because I don't know how, but it had reached that far, and he was biracial, which is another thing that we kind of deal with this kind of festival, but he was interested in submitting, and so we allowed him to submit. But yeah, it's from all over. You know, the last 2 years we've had playwrights from New York, California, Georgia, Missouri, Texas, all kinds of cities and states have had their plays done with Fade to Black. This year, however, I think it's picked up a little bit. We have 7 playwrights from the state of Texas. And we have 4, which is, we've never had that many, but we have 4 playwrights from the city of Houston.
Oh, fantastic. So Houston is
really
next. It almost seems like It almost seems like we have to be validated all around the country before we picked up the momentum in terms of getting involvement with people in our own backyard. I've always found that to be very interesting. With so many people coming from all across the country, and like I say, this is the first thing of its kind in the Houston area. Stuff like this, as I'm sure you know, happens all the time in other parts of the country, particularly on the East Coast and in the North.
Yeah.
Have we gotten any feedback from some of your contributors from around the country in terms of how this festival stacks up against others that they participated in other parts of the country?
Well, I get a lot that people are very proud of what we're doing. We are still in our beginning days, and so, and we are the very first. We don't have, anyone to look back and say, well, they did it this way or that way.
Right.
I would have to look at other states to see how they did it. But I think the overall consensus is that it was well overdue. It is an awesome thing for the community. The fact that we make sure that it is a culturally diverse event is a big thing for us. And so we have a lot of people who are saying that this is a really great thing. It's a very positive thing for Black playwrights, and it's an extraordinary, groundbreaking thing for the city of Houston because, you know, nobody's ever decided to do it. But I think that people respect the fact that we have a panel of judges that will pick finalists. We take special care to perform the plays. A lot of times you'll get into you become a finalist for a competition and you'll just have a reading. But we actually perform the plays for them. So, you know, every playwright that becomes a finalist is just happy to have been chosen. And I've never had anyone say that this is not a really great thing.
And, you know, Denise, as you might know, I'm a adjunct faculty at the University of Houston, and one of the courses that I teach there is a course in Black theater, and I won't even mention his name, he's retired now, but the former head of the theater department at the U of H, I've seen speaking engagements that he's attended where the Ensemble Theater and other groups in Houston have brought in prominent Black playwrights, and just people in theater, period, into the city. And invariably, he always asks the question, you know, what happened to the Black playwrights? It doesn't seem like that we have the Black playwrights that we did back during the Black Arts Movement, back during the 60s, the Baracas, the Ed Bellins, what's her name, Kennedy. I don't know why her name is escaping me. And just a little prior to that, Lorraine Hansberry's. Is it that there are the numbers of Black playwrights are few and far between in this new millennium age? Or is it that they're still out there, but there's just been a lack or a void of venues for them to do their work?
Well, I think there's a whole lot of playwrights, a lot of self-produced playwrights. The reason why we don't know about them is because they don't have the exposure that they would need to put them in the limelight. But having a venue or platform to showcase your work is very difficult. And that is why you will see a lot of Black playwrights self-producing. There's nothing wrong with that, but the quality of their work is seldom checked, or there's seldom any quality control over the quality of work. It's just, I got a venue, I paid the rent for the venue, I put this play together, and I like my play, and I got some actors that like it, and so we're going to perform. What we find, unfortunately, is a lot of Black playwrights that are just kind of going on their own to make it happen because nobody else has made it happen for them. So, you know, it's great that they have the initiative to do that, But if you are self-taught like I am and so many other independent playwrights are, you have a responsibility to make sure your work is the very best it can be. And you have a responsibility to your audience to put before them the very best material. And I don't think a lot of our playwrights are connected to that. I think they just are happy to have a play mounted, which is hard work. But, you know, I always say if the audience says, if this show is not good or if this is not a good quality show, if this is just something you threw together, I'm going to ask for my money back. And if more audience members did that, I think playwrights would change their perspective. They would put more work into putting together a better overall product, which is the presentation, the production, the cleanness of your, you know, of how you do things and how orderly everything is, and then the writing, you know, how does the story come together? Is it really a good piece of work? Has it been tried? Have you done rewrites? Those kind of things help you to put together the best show, your more refined show, and you do it once, and then you make a commitment to yourself to be better at it the next year, do even better the next year. I just don't see a lot of that. So it is important for us with Fade to Black to have everyone's play. We don't have a theme for the playwrights. We tell them, you write what you feel, you write based on your experience, whatever subject matter, fine. Whatever language or way you want to communicate, just write it. Put it together, make it a good piece of work. And then we take it through judging. You know, it has to be screened to make sure they follow the rules. And then it goes to a panel of judges before it is placed before an audience. So it's just the mindset that I have that, you know, you need to do what you can to make sure it's the best you can make it at this time of your life. You might be a better writer next year, but for now, you know, you do your best. So, yeah, they may not have a lot of places to perform. They may not have a lot of exposure. I think a lot of issues sometimes is that the black playwright may not invite everyone to the party. They may do a play and just invite their people. Unfortunately, their people may be in the same economic status they are or the same resource level that they are. Their people may not know some person that can help propel them to the next level. So, you know, it's important for Fade to Black to be culturally diverse so people of all backgrounds and races can see the work. You know, you never know. Somebody's play may become something better and bigger because someone, or not, you know, not necessarily a white person or a black person, but somebody that has resources or connections that can help to elevate that playwright.
I certainly agree. And I would submit in addition to that, that it should be more diverse, not just in terms of culture or ethnic background, but in terms of bringing in people with variant levels of experience and knowledge,
right,
about theater. You know, a lot of individuals, particularly this happened a lot in the early 90s, because that was right on the heel that I had been touring nationally and I had been on Broadway myself with the play The Diary of Black Man. And a lot of individuals that I knew that, you know, my background and my success there. And they would invite me to their plays in the early 90s. And it was amazing that the houses would be packed. Not that I was amazed at their marketing skills, but I was amazed by how many people showed up for the quality, or should I say the lack thereof, of some of the productions. And I would invariably get asked after the show, so what do you think, Frank? I'm thinking about taking this thing on tour. What's your thoughts about it? And, you know, Denise, I always had to kind of hesitate and choose my words carefully because you never, never, ever want to discourage anyone.
Yeah, you don't want to be
a lot of times what they didn't realize is that the reason that they, A, had a packed house, B, ended up with a standing ovation, is that they invited a house full of family and friends who were not used to seeing them. Seeing them write,
yeah, they just happy to see a play.
Writer or act as a performer in the forms of an actor, not seeing them in that context. And so the actor, you know, they may have invited all their friends and coworkers. Then they may work at the post office, and their friends are used to seeing them in that context with that blue post office uniform on. So just for them, just to see their coworker memorize all those lines, as they were saying, and to be praying to get on stage, just made them the most, made them the next James Earl Jones in their mind. And, you know, people would soak that in and soak that up. And so my response became, well, you know, you did a good job here tonight, but do understand when you go into another venue, and a venue in which the patrons will be unfamiliar with you, not only unfamiliar with your works, but unfamiliar with you. So they're not going to be family and friends, and they're not going to be quite as accepting of your work if it is not up to par. And so I think you're exactly right in terms of, you know, and I've self-produced almost every play that I've done. And so, you know, I'm not knocking that, but I certainly understand that. And I think, you know, one of the things that a person must do in the meantime, because there is a flip side to that. You know, sometimes we have to self-produce because there's no other opportunities for us. No one else, including some of our venues right here in H-Town, won't give Houston area playwrights an opportunity to showcase their works at their venue. So what else are you going to do? Well, I think one of the other things that you can do prior to going up before a paid audience is to, you know, do a stage reading. Do a stage reading.
Yeah, that's a foreign concept to a lot of people.
I know.
And, you know, it's necessary. It's necessary for the playwright to develop the work and produce. I say product a lot. Product to me is all things considered, all things inclusive of a production. So, you know, you do your reading. Not everybody's going to like it, but you'll get some pointers, some ideas that may help you tweak it and make it a better overall play. But if you don't know to do that, you don't do it. And if you feel that you don't need that, you won't do it. You know, I am inclined, if it's a full-length play, I'm inclined to do a reading so that I can hear it out loud and just, you know, do what I can to make it the best thing I can make it. But not everybody does that. And a lot of playwrights will have a big house because it, you know, it is people that they know. But outside of that, it really wouldn't pass a witness test. And it wouldn't do that well if it was outside of the realm of the family. There's nobody that will come to critique that play. You won't get a critic for that play. And that tells you, you know, something important. It's like, well, why can't I get any critic to come to my play? And it's just because, you know, you haven't told me to come. I don't know who you are, or your writing is bad.
You know, when we spoke a couple of days ago, I was telling you about the event in tiny Salem-Winston, Salem, North Carolina, that they have every other year. As a matter of fact, it's going to be going down this year, the first week in August, called the National Black Theater Festival. And in addition to putting on, I would say, about 25 to 30 full-scale productions, they also have a play reading series, talking about play reading and the value of it, which they do understand in other parts of the country. They have two play reading series at this biannual event, one called Stagecoach at High Noon, in which they do just stage readings at noon every day, and one, the other is called Conversations at Midnight. And when I first went, I thought, you know, how is this going to work? They're going to be just reading the play at midnight. Who's going to come to that? Well, I the first time I went to the event, the room was absolutely packed. So, again, in other parts of the country, folks are very aware about the importance and the significance. And some of the people doing the readings were actually stars. I remember going to a reading in which one of the readers was Tico Wells. He played the role of choir boy in Robert Townsend's Five Heart Beat. I've seen, I believe his name is Luke Cobbs. I don't know why. Bill Cobbs, who's an old-time black actor. You may not recognize his name for a lot of our listening audience, but once you see Bill Cobbs, you know exactly who he is because he's been in a plethora of films and stage productions. So you actually have Hollywood names who are, you know, like competing just to do, as we would think, just to do a stage reading. So it's quite phenomenal, and it is, as you suggest, quite helpful for a playwright to get some perspective, to get some feedback outside of family and friends about the value and the quality of his works.
Right.
If you're just joining us, this is the Let's Be Frank Show on Blog Talk Radio. A very special guest this evening is Denise O'Neill. She's the founder of Fade to Black. It is a theater festival that's going to be going on in H-Town June the 11th through the 13th. We're going to get her to give us more information about the location and ticket prices in just a second. But we also invite you, our listening audience, to call in with your questions or comments. You can give us a call at 347-857-2002. Again, that number is 347-857-2002. And once again, if you're new to Blog Talk Radio, once you dial that number, you will hear an automated voice. It will instruct you to press the number 1 on your phone if you want to get in and join us on this conversation, because you can also call that same number simply to listen to the show. So once you press the number 1, excuse me, on your touchtone phone, that is then an icon to me letting me know that that you want to get on the air. We'll be certainly glad to have you. Again, that number is 347-857-2002. And again, at the prompting of the automated voice, press the number 1 on your phone. So, Denise, the play of the festival is June the 11th through the 13th. Number 1, how many productions are you going to be doing this year?
How many? Well,
how many plays are you going to be doing for this year's festival?
Well, oh, it's 10 short plays, 10 minute plays actually.
Okay.
And that will allow us to provide a full evening of plays, 2 hours. And on Friday, 11th is a Thursday, and then Friday night we'll have a playwright talk back immediately following the Friday night show. And we're expecting almost a full panel of playwrights from all over the nation. And, you know, I think all 7 from Texas will be there. So we should have a full panel of playwrights. But they will stay after the show and just answer questions from the audience.
Another opportunity for feedback.
Yeah, and then Saturday we will announce the grand prize winner.
Okay.
So we will have the same show every night. The audience will vote each night, and then on Saturday we'll have the total of votes, and then we'll be able to select the winner.
Sounds good. Hey, let's go to our phone lines. This call looks like it's coming from the Houston, Texas area. The last 4 digits are 6380. Caller, you're on the Let's Be Frank Show. State your name and where you're from.
My name is Vincent Victoria. And,
Vincent Victoria, like to... how you doing this evening?
Hi, Vincent.
Hey, Denise, how are you?
I'm fine.
I'm just falling to say, you know, I'm a big fan of Denise O'Neill. And just saying hello, basically.
Well, this is not only Vincent Victoria. He is the winning director from Fade to Black 2014.
Okay.
He won. His play won by landslide. So he's such a humble guy. But yeah, Vincent took a play by a new playwright and made it an awesome work, and the crowd just loved it. And when we calculated those votes, it was a landslide. He just took it. So we're proud, and I am honored and happy that he's back with us this year. He is the director for one of our Houstonian playwrights. So, yeah, Vince, I'm a fan of Vincent.
And so am I. Yeah, I've seen some of the work of Mr. Victoria, and he's one of Houston's own that we should be very proud of, and certainly should be very knowledgeable of his work.
Well, I just wanted to just to say hello to Denise, and I love Fade to Black, and can't wait for everybody to see the show.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome this year. We are in a larger venue, and I don't think I had a chance to say that. We're in a big venue that is a brand new venue. We will be coming in as a paint drive, basically. I am extremely honored that Fade to Black had enough push for the Queensberry Theater to really invite us in. They made some great concessions for us to rent that spot out, and we will be the very first event to grace their stage.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of people are very excited about that. A lot of people are like, ooh, I want to be there. you're the first to, and we are. So, it's in the Town and Country area, really nice area of town, and I'm happy to bring the demographic of patrons to this beautiful theater. So things are coming together for us very well.
Vincent, did you have a question that you'd like to ask our guest?
I didn't. I do not. I was just saying hello to Denise.
Okay.
That's
well,
all.
We're certainly going to be looking forward to seeing one of your upcoming shows in the future. And as a matter of fact, make sure you stay in contact with me so we can have you back on our show to, talk about some of the fantastic things that you're doing in the neighborhood.
Yours is opening in July, right? Is it June or July?
July, right after Fade to Black ends.
Yeah.
I started rehearsal for my show, so getting ready for that. So.
This is an exception to the rule I told you about, where it's essential for the writer to have many, many readings. I don't know if he does rewrites, but he's one of the exceptions to the rule where his work comes out very well without several formal readings. But not everybody can do that.
Well, And I think that's because, and then Vincent, if I can have you on the phone just a second or two more, that's because Vincent comes from a theater background, and I think that's the main difference between people like him and yourself and some of these, so-called new playwrights that's coming along. And I hate to say it, and I don't want this to get into a forum or a discussion on the works of Tyler Perry or some of the other playwrights who, because now we have another title for a particular genre of theater that has cropped up over the last, I'm going to say about the last 20, 25 years, called urban theater, which is a little bit different from the kind of theater that we do. And because of the box office success, and this is what people don't realize, guys, is that simply because you have a box office success doesn't mean that your show is of quality. What is it, the WWE wrestling is a tremendous success at the box office, but the wrestling ain't real compared to boxing. And so if I could use that as an analogy, people will look at the box office success of some of these urban theater pieces and say, I want to be the next Tyler Perry, with absolutely no background in theater, no formal training, know anything, and, you know, they throw together, a little piece. And one of the things I found, even with some of the urban theater pieces that have gone on to have great box office success, is that not only are they poorly written, in many cases, they're not even really totally written. I had a friend that was at one of those shows. She went to the first rehearsal, and the script was only about 25 pages long. Now, you guys know
I've seen that before.
yeah.
And that's a whole it's a lot of singing. And you know, so Fades to Black will bring to light a complete package, a completely, they're 10 minutes long. They're short plays, which is an art form in itself to write a short play. But it brings to light, this is what a quality short play looks like. And we make sure that the subject matters are diverse so people can see 10 short plays that are well-written, and you can say, okay, that is the example of a well-written play, and then the rest is production for us to make sure that it's a good presentation. So, you know, if you just don't know, you don't know. You have to make it your responsibility to learn and grow and develop and make it better each year. But this is just for me, it's kind of a teaching mechanism because that's how I learned a lot of things. I went to see a play. So, you know, we know what we know until we know better.
Yeah, that's true.
But if a play is amazingly funny and very successful, unless you're from a theater background, you may not care about all that. You just want to. You know, you just want a funny show or a good feeling show. You're not trying to pick it apart like a theater person will. But, you know, it took him a long time to be recognized by other cultures. But he didn't care. You know, he had his family behind him.
That's true.
Right. But if a black playwright needs to take it further, he's going to have the support of not only his family, but other people that he doesn't know.
I think as playwrights, we owe it to our community to present works that show us in a positive light, and because we're the only ones that are going to tell our story.
Right.
So that is so important. We have to tell our stories and get treasures that people haven't heard of before, and bring them to life. So many rich stories about the African American experience that people don't know about.
And
are surprised
to
about.
Yeah,
they may just
think. I'm sorry?
They may just think that, you know, I'm going to go to a black play, it's going to be this way and that way. And Fade to Black shows you that it's not. It's all different kinds of themes. We have plays this year that are extremely intellectual. We have plays that are funny. We have plays that are, you know, there's 10 plays, and they're all totally different worlds. Every play is like a whole other place in time. So they give a variety, and I think that's important for people to see, that we're not just one-dimensional.
Right, and I would like to add to a comment that Vincent just spoke of in terms of showing us as African American people in a positive light, that when you do present the negative, because the truth is that we have good people and bad people in our community, the good, the bad, and the ugly, that you still have a responsibility as a writer to provide a frame of reference. See, I personally don't have a issue with, because, you know, we learn in literature 101 that you have the protagonist and the antagonist. So if you got an all-black cast, there's going to be a bad guy in the production, so to speak. But I think the writer owes it to the audience, owes it to the community, to provide the proper frame of reference in terms of speaking to why that character is negative. And that comes in your character development. And that's what you don't see with a lot of playwrights. You know, what you see oftentimes in urban theater, you see the stereotypical overweight matriarch. You see the player or pimp type. You see the loose woman type. But there's no frame of reference. There's nothing in the character development that says how they got there. One of the plays that we read in my class is a play by playwright Richard Wesley called Sirens. And Sirens is a play about prostitutes. But what Richard Wesley does is that he provides the proper frame of reference. He talks about the two main characters who are prostitutes, Mavis and Pepper, and he provides for the audience some background information in terms of things or events that happened in their lives that caused them to make the decisions that they did. And later on, of course, we see the consequences of those decisions. In a lot of the urban theater productions, you don't see that. You see the prostitute, but you just assume she sprung out of her mama's womb as a prostitute. And there's no background information to tell you otherwise.
And,
so for me, you know, as a way, you know, if I'm listening to the audience and saying, okay, I'm hearing you guys say that, but as a patient of the audience, how do I know good theater from bad theater? How do I know good quality from, you know, those are the things you should look at. Character development, plot construction. Many of these pieces don't have any plot. You know, they just get what I call a 90-minute stand-up comedy routine on stage. But absolutely no structure in terms of plot construction. So, to me, those are some of the
main. Why do you think that is, though?
Because
why do you
of what
think
you've been saying
all
night long, Denise. Because of what you've been saying all night long, these people have no background. They see the success of Tyler Perry and some of the other urban theater writers, and they see, and the thing is, they see mainly the financial success, not the artistic success. And that's what they want. And so without any training, without any background, without any studying, without any research, they throw together a play and invite their mama and their Aunt Emmy and Uncle Joe and their co-workers, and they get a standing ovation, and they think that they have arrived.
Yeah. And that's
believe it or not, we've gone by very fast. We only got about 3 minutes left. So if we have any listening audience that wants to call in with a question, you only got about 2.5 minutes to call in. Let me kick in that number one more time. That number is 347-857-2002. Again, that number is 347-857-2002. Once again, once you call that number, you will need to press the number 1 on your touch-tone phone to indicate to me that you want to be on the air. And since we are running kind of short of time, Denise, I do want you to give us a little bit more information about the festival. It is June the 11th through June the 13th. If you can again give the location and information about tickets, ticket prices, and where people may be able to acquire them.
Okay, you can definitely go to fadetoblackfest.com to find out all of this information and see an informational video that we posted. But we will start 8:00 nightly. We will be performing at the Queensberry Theater at 12777 Queensberry Lane. In Houston. That's going to be in the Town and Country area. The tickets are $20 for everyone, but the box office will charge a $3 fee. So it may be $23, or it may just be $20 and then $3 for but
right,
the tickets
right.
are $20. There's no change or differentiation with the tickets. So $20 across the board. I will say that this year has a set of plays that may not be suitable for a patron that's under 18.
Gotcha.
And I've never said that before, but we have, you know, we let the playwrights write what they feel and what their experience is. And so, you know, we may have language that is offensive to some people. But this year, a couple of the plays may have some subject matter that is a bit over the top, especially for someone who is under 18. So we will place it in our materials that some of the plays may not be suitable for children, and I'm hoping that nobody brings their little kids to the plays because it's just not for children this year.
So are you leaving that for parental discretion, or are you going to have someone to monitor that at the door?
I will talk to the box office to tell them what specific things they need to look out for
And hope that the parents will be wise enough not to bring their children to the shows. But, you know, some people are very liberal, and they're free, they don't mind. But if I was a parent, I would not bring them this particular year. I'd just make it a parents' night out and leave it at that.
Denise, has been fun. We got to run. You gave the I can't think of the words I want to use, online information. Is there a number that people can call if they have any questions?
Sure. They can give me a call directly at 832-877-7609. If they go online, there's a way for them to send an email if they wish to do so, and I try to return their email inquiries pretty quickly.
And one final thing. I understand that you're also trying to solicit support, and so I think you have if it's not a GoFundMe campaign, another one of the online funding.
Yeah,
fundraising,
we found this great site.
Go ahead.
It's youcaring.com, a very great site. I don't think a lot of people have heard about it, but it allows organizations to raise funds that are needed. If you go to youcaring.com and put in the search word Faith of Black, it'll come up with a video and our supporters. And, you know, we're asking people, whatever you want to give is greatly appreciated, tax deductible, and we will definitely be putting it into good work. We also have tickets available to those donors who give a $100 donation. They can get two tickets to the Houston Astros and the Seattle Mariners game on the 13th of June.
Oh, that's certainly some incentive for people to give. Denise, it's been fun. This hour has passed by so quickly, but you know, hopefully our listening audience got the message of just how fantastic of an event this is. I would tell you to go and in the tradition of a performing artist to break a leg, but one year while I was performing, I had a lawnmower accident and cut off a toe. So I'm not going to you and say break a leg, but I will tell you to have a good show, have a good festival, and we'll be talking with you soon.
Thank you.
And thanks for being on the show. We'll be right back. Surrounding this event, Our show is archived, so you can come back and listen to the show in its entirety. Well, guess what, guys? Guess what time it is? It is birthday time. Time to send out a few birthday shout-outs to some of our loyal listeners. To all my fellas Taurus people out there celebrating a birthday on today is Mr. Philip Hall. Philip Hall is a fantastic a musician on a keyboard, and he turns 49 on today. Happy birthday, Philip. Also, I don't have his age, but also celebrating the birthday today is a fantastic actor, one of Houston's finest, Mr. Timothy Eric. You might have seen Tim at some fantastic performances at the Ensemble. He's also been in a number of films that's been shot here in the Houston area, and as of the last couple of years, he's faculty in the theater department at Texas Southern University. So happy birthday, Tim. Celebrating the birthday on tomorrow, May the 18th, is Miss Joyce Michael Miller. A lot of love going out to Joyce. Joyce was the first young lady that toured with us as a dancer with the nationally acclaimed production of The Diary of Black Men. Also celebrating a birthday on tomorrow is comedian Thomas Miles, who you might know as Nephew Tommy on The Steve Harvey Show. You might know him as Nephew Tommy on The Steve Harvey Show. You might not know that Thomas is a native Houstonian, and he's celebrating his 48th birthday on tomorrow. Celebrating the birthday on next Saturday, May the 27th, is my good friend and former roommate on the road. I call him my road dog, Mr. Ray Walker. Ray turns 63 on next weekend. Another fantastic thespian from the Detroit, Michigan area, but he's now living right here in H-Town. Mr. James Faulkner Reed is celebrating the birthday on next Saturday. And last but not least, Houston filmmaker Marcus, Mr. Texans, Houston, Texas, Jones is celebrating a birthday on tomorrow. For each and every one of you guys, we got something special just for you.
Once a year we celebrate with stupid hats and plastic plates the fact that you were able to make another trip around the sun. And the whole clan gathers round and gifts and laughter do abound. And we let out a joyful sound and sing that stupid song.
Happy birthday!
Now you're 1 year older.
Happy birthday!
Your life still isn't over.
Happy birthday!
You did not accomplish much, but you didn't die this year. I guess that's good enough. So let's drink to your fading health and hope you don't remind yourself your chance of finding fame and wealth decrease with every year. Does it feel like you're doing laps and eating food and taking naps and hoping that someday perhaps your life will hold some cheer?
Happy birthday!
What have you done that matters?
Happy birthday!
You're starting to get fatter.
Happy birthday!
It's downhill from now on. Try not to remind yourself your best years are all gone. If cryogenics were all free, then you could live like Walt Disney and live for all eternity inside a block of ice. But instead your time is set, this is the only life you get. And though it hasn't ended yet, sometimes you wish it might.
Happy birthday!
You wish you had more money.
Happy birthday!
Your life's so sad, it's funny.
Happy birthday!
How much more can you take? But your friends are hungry, so just cut the stupid cake.
Happy birthday! Happy birthday!
Each and every one of you, a very happy birthday, and hopefully many, many more. Coming up next, The Quiet Storm for Lovers Only. This is the Let's Be Frank Show.
Crazy mixed up world no more. It seems like I haven't found that right girl. Your hypocrite, did you think of me? You're changing. Like your love, it changes day and night. Like New Year's, when farmer time passes by, like the desert sand turn into borderland. You're not for me. I'm not for you. Thank you. my girl, come walk with me. Brown-eyed girl, come talk with me. I wanna do all the things in love a man should do, all the little things you want me to. Brown-eyed girl, brown-eyed girl.
Everything will be all right. just be my lady. I love you every day and night. Just be my lady. I promise you that everything will be all right. Just be my lady. That's really what you ought to do. Just be my lady. Love I have was meant for you. Just be my lady. Everything you ask of me, sweetheart, I'll do for you. My promise is I'll always be true, no matter what no one tries to do, until death do us part, you can have. That's a long, long time. Just be my lady. I've said all that I'm gonna say. Just be my lady. Just take my hand and I'll lead the way. Just be my lady. And there's no better time to start than today. Today.
Just be.